When Job's three friends, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, heard about all the troubles that had come upon him, they set out from their homes and met together by agreement to go and sympathize with Job and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights. No one said a word to him, because they saw how great his sufferings were.
Thank you, Ed, for that scripture reading. This is going to be a hard message for me. This is one that I was putting off. I was saving it until the end. But then I kind of thought about it, and sometimes it's best to take those things that you're going to procrastinate and put off and just do it, and just rip the Band-Aid off and get to it. So I'm doing it today. And I'm glad I did, because I think Don had some great songs that fit what we're doing. I really appreciated hearing what Troy said. I don't think it stole any thunder, but I think it added to it. I think it was really helpful. But yeah, this is a hard message for me. But I think it's an important one. And I don't want to come up here and make every sermon about me and my experiences, but this is one that is close to my heart. And I will share some more personal experiences. And I hope that you feel honored by that, because I feel safe with y'all. And I know a lot of you, when I lost my mom, walked with me through it. And I really appreciate that. So I was tapping into those emotions all this time working through this sermon. So, but looking at the story of Job, Job's a man who's having his faith and his commitment to God challenged and tested. The adversary kind of wondered about Job. He pointed at Job and he said, "Hey, look at this guy. You think he's really that faithful? You think he's really that good? If his life wasn't so great, if he didn't have everything handed to him on a silver platter, he wouldn't be that faithful." And that's part of the moral of the story, right? It's because there's this idea, and I've heard it today, that, oh, church people, they're just good Christians because their life is easy. They're only faithful because God's handed them everything. If their lives were hard, they wouldn't be this faithful. But part of the moral of the story here is, no, that's not the case. There's a lot of God's people that are really faithful through suffering. Sometimes it's in that suffering where their faith even grows. So the accusation's not fair. But they're going to put him to the test, and he's going to suffer some. And so in chapter 1, the text was that Ed read is chapter 2. But in chapter 1, Job has 4 rounds of bad news all hit him one after the other. 2 different groups of raiders from different places have attacked. A fire's burned up a lot of his stuff. So he's lost servants. He's lost oxen, camels, sheep. All his ability to make and produce wealth is gone. He just went bankrupt. He's lost all his money, all his wealth. But then the 4th message that happens right after all that bad news is the worst. A house collapsed, and he just lost all his kids. He's got nothing. I can't imagine the utter shock of hearing that one after the other. It would definitely feel like something out there is out to get me. God is out to get me. Someone at this level of misfortune, that quick together, that's not coincidence. Someone's mad at me. So Job tears his robe, which in the ancient world, tearing your robe, that's a sign of extreme grief, deep mourning. Something that's happened that is so wrong, so bad, so unjust, that it's not, it's all the negative emotions. It's anger, it's sadness, it's rage. I know the feeling, just wanting to rip things and freak out. That's what's happening here. Deep, deep pain and despair. But he still acknowledges that, well, all these good things that were just taken from me, they all came from God to start with. Man, that's a difficult, but also somewhat healthy perspective, right? He can still worship. He still acknowledges this wasn't what I built. This is what God built. Then on top of that, the adversary says, okay, well, let's tack a little more on. So his body ends up being covered with sores. And so he goes and he sits in the ashes. Ashes are symbolic of the impermanence of life, that everything decays. And sitting in them is this additional sign of deep devastation, mourning, of this humility that is acknowledging powerlessness. There's nothing I can do but sit here with torn robes, upset, powerless, and broken. And it's after all this happens that his friends show up in the text this morning. Job's friends are kind of known for giving bad advice, right? Like the whole book of Job, a lot of Job is this dialogue with them, filled with inaccuracies about why we suffer, essentially telling Job, somehow this has got to be your fault, which is human wisdom. I mean, when you look at it, it feels like God's mad at you and there must be a reason for this, but we know that's not totally fair. But when all these things bad happen to you, you've lost your children, the last thing you need to hear is, somehow this is your fault. That's probably not a very helpful thing to tell Job. But the text this morning, what Ed read to us, that is what they did right. I think they actually look like pretty good friends, exceptional friends. It was when they opened their mouths when they started messing up. But what they did at first, they did right. They were good friends. They showed up. They showed up. They were present. Sometimes that is difficult. Sometimes that's easier said than done. One of my uncles, I remember when my kids were first born, he said, you know, sometimes as a dad, step one is just showing up. He said, some people can't even do that. And that's sad. And I think he meant that in a couple of ways. I think he meant the dads who have kids and don't ever raise them and miss out on such a beautiful experience of life and just leave. But I think he also meant the dads who have kids, but they're more interested in work or their own lives or their phones or video games or whatever it is, where they're just not as present as they need to be. Show up at home. Show up at the dinner table. Show up at your kids' events. I think that's kind of what my uncle was saying. It's a low bar, but showing up is a big deal. Being there says I care, and it means I'm with you. But especially in moments of pain. Troy mentioned people showing up at his house, friends showing up in that tough moment. And that's, man, that's beautiful. That is powerful. I thought of a time when I lived in Pryor in Oklahoma where my family was in crisis. And I'm really blessed to be able to say this. My mother-in-law showed up uninvited, and I was glad to see her. That's the part where I'm blessed. Because a lot of people, when your mother-in-law shows up, you're like, oh. But not me. Only you bad guys. I love my mother-in-law. But I love showing her. It was like, oh, this is going to be some stability, and she's going to be really helpful. Sometimes when I preach up here, you guys hear me saying something that I wasn't trying to communicate. And sometimes I think that's Holy Spirit. Sometimes it's like, oh, awesome, I'm glad you heard that. Other times I'm like, I'm saying that. Please don't hear me saying show up at my house at random times. I generally don't like that. But I remember the week my mom passed, a lot of people showed up in really big ways. The morning after my mother passed, we were all at my mom and dad's house. Sad. Still in shock. Still, I was kind of hoping I would wake up and this would have all been not real. But it was real. And I remember a knock at the door. We weren't expecting anybody. Nobody was invited. And we went to see who it was, and it was my Uncle Kenny, my dad's brother. I don't know what he had planned that day. I don't know what he wasn't showing up to. But his calendar got cleared, and he was there and present with my dad, and it was a very painful and very intimate moment. And it was good for my dad. That was who we needed there. And it meant so much to all of us that my Uncle Kenny showed up in that difficult, painful moment and was able to serve and love and be present with my dad in a way that none of us could, in a way that his kids couldn't. It just meant so much that he showed. And I still remember at our funeral seeing so many of you here and how much that meant to me. I have former students from Pryor, Oklahoma, cleared their calendar, made this very long drive to honor my mom, to be present with me just for a moment, just for a quick, one of the students, Ariel, from Pryor, I had 30 seconds with her for this quick back-breaking hug that she always gives. And she cleared her calendar. She missed work just to be there with me for that one moment. That meant so much. Friends from all places and all periods of my life colliding and meeting each other. And each one, when you see them, knowing they canceled plans, they made the drive, that meant a lot. There is a powerful sense of comfort that just showing up brought. That's what Job's friends did. They cleared the calendar. They dropped everything. The crops can wait. Maybe the crops can die. Our friend needs us. The family business is on hold. Any meetings that were happening, they can wait, cancel them. And they even get together and they kind of make this plan to go and be with him together. They're good friends. They're good friends who showed up. And really, Job, other than his wife, this is all he's got, is these guys. And like I said, showing up, it should be obvious. It should be easy. But sometimes it's not. And not just because life is busy. That's part of it. But there is some pain. There are some ministry trenches that are so dark, that are so painful, that are so difficult. It's really hard to insert ourselves into those. It's really hard to walk with people through really difficult moments. About a year after I moved here, a former student and Pryor passed away suddenly, 14-year-old girl. And I don't like bad-mouthing people, or like, especially when we're online. But there's three ministers in this girl's life that we were all very close with her, two of which were no longer ministers there. And we all needed to show up. And I get that nobody wants to do a funeral for a young girl. But one of those ministers went dark and didn't show up for this girl or the family. And I still am like upset about it. I'm still judgy about it. I still feel like as a minister, you need to show up for people in those darkest, most difficult moments. But as I judgmentally criticize this guy for not, one of the guys for not showing, I have to reflect on myself and think, are there any dark ministry trenches that I have not inserted myself into? Are there people that I am not showing up for? Are there things going on in people's lives that I need to be more present in, but for some reason or another, I'm not going there? And I'm offering this criticism to myself, but I'm also saying, hey, us as Christians, we believe in the priesthood of all believers, right? Us as ministers, us as people, as members of a community, maybe we need to all ask that. Are there some ministry trenches you need to be showing up in that you aren't? And those ministry trenches, just to give you some examples, is friends struggling in their marriages, maybe going through divorce. Maybe that's shut-ins, people stuck at home. Maybe it's people dealing with major sickness, maybe even terminal sickness. I was really proud of Caleb Powell for the way he showed up for his friend struggling with a terminal illness. Sometimes there are sicknesses, there are difficulties in life that are so tough and so outside of our comfort that we are almost afraid to touch it. We're almost afraid to enter ourselves into those situations. But sometimes as friends, as ministers of the gospel, as church community, sometimes we do need to insert ourselves into those things. Sometimes we do need to show up. And I think there's a lot of reasons we don't. There's a lot of, I don't want to call them excuses. Sometimes it's legit. Sometimes we say, you know what, that is not my business. Or I have this boundary in my own personal life, and I just can't handle that right now. Or, you know what, they don't really want to hear from me. They don't want me to show up. They want someone else. And look, there are times when all those things are right. There are times when you might be right. But then, if you ever make those excuses, you need to ask, is that an excuse? Is this really right, or is this just an excuse? Is this just something I am telling myself to keep me from going and doing this difficult thing? Is this something I'm telling myself to keep me from being present where I'm really needed to be? So I think sometimes we need to show up. We say we aren't needed. We say this isn't for us, when in reality, maybe we're just making an excuse. Again, maybe sometimes that's legit. But I want you to think, are there friends? Are there people that you need to be more present with in the trenches? Are there friends you need to show up for, like Job's friends did? Another thing I think they did right: one, they showed up, but two, they grieved. They wept. They, from seeing Job, they tore their robes. They were overcome with grief and anger and sadness at what's going on. For a week. And that's love. That is commitment. Thank God Job didn't have to grieve alone. Job didn't have to grieve alone. That's a big deal that these people were present. They were sad with their friend. Something else that I think is special is they knew Job's kids. They were sad about the loss too. They were hurt by the loss too. So they were sad for their own experience in the loss, but they're also sad for their friend's loss. Seeing him grieve must have been really painful. I remember at my mom's funeral, one of my high school best friends, hadn't seen him in several years, showed up. Didn't hear from him the week before, but he was there. He was present at the funeral. And the moment he saw me, the tears on his face just started pouring. That made me think of Job's friend showing up, and just when they see their friend in that situation, that's when they start tearing the robes. That's when it just starts happening. It hits them. But my buddy, when he saw me, I think he was trying to apologize. He couldn't really get the words out. But he was saying, I couldn't call. He couldn't bring himself to reach out is what he was trying to. He kind of felt like, I should have reached out, but it was so painful for him too. So hard. So hard to face. And it was really what I saw on his face, I remember, was just like Job's friends. He just lost someone too. It wasn't just my mom. He lost someone really important to him. And it was hard for him. And he showed up when it mattered. He showed up. He was a good friend. He did his due diligence. It was a holy moment for me to realize, like, oh man, my mom meant so much to Corey. His name's Corey. Meant so much to him. But he was sad for her, sad for him, but also sad with me. And that's what these guys are doing. And that's I don't know if healing is the word, but that I would rather grieve like that. I would rather grieve with people. And so that was a big deal for me. And I know nobody wants to feel pitied. You know, that's not usually a good thing. You don't want to feel pitied, but for people to be sad for you and with you, man, that sometimes is really needed, and that meant a lot to me. It made me feel remotely understood. But another thing I really want to highlight is that, one, they got together. They sat on the ground, which is in Jewish culture, getting low to the ground is a sign of grieving and mourning and humility. They're with him a long time, but no one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. The dudes read the room. They read the room. They came and saw, and now is not the time. There are times where you wish you had the words, and you just don't. A lot of times, words in those cases aren't super helpful, and this was, Margaret brought this up in class, and Troy mentioned it, sometimes we want to go and fix people. This is not the time to be fixed. I remember hearing someone say pretty close after my mom passed, saying, hey, I don't think this is the time to cheer me up yet. A little soon for that. Sometimes we start trying to fix people. It's almost like what you're going through is an inconvenience to me, and I want to fix it so it fixes myself. And in a way, it kind of can almost make it about us. But they're not trying to do that. They read the room, and they know, hey, we're not going to fix anything, but we're going to walk or sit. We're going to sit with our friend through this. We're going to be present with him in this moment. And so sometimes in grief, it is hard when you don't have the words, but maybe it's better to just say nothing and be present if you don't have the words. When my mom passed, we had on the piano in our front room, we have we put all the cards that people sent, really sweet, really thoughtful cards, just lined across. And usually we had them, they're closed, and you can just see the front of the card. But there was one card that we left open where you could see what the card said, because it was just a few words. Someone who probably gets it. The words just said in real big print, God be with you. God, that was it. Not a whole lot of other words to say in moments like that. But I thought that was a really sweet prayer. It was Steve Henderson who sent it. Really sweet prayer, really sweet words, and a really nice thing to hope for someone in that moment is that, and a good reminder that in that suffering, God is present with you. And maybe he's not going to fix everything right then and there, but God is present with you. Don mentioned Isaiah 53, and it is a really funny thing that we would call Jesus a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Jesus knew both. He knew physical suffering, but he also knew the pain of relationships and suffering. He knew what loss was like. And much like last week, we discussed how relationships and community is worth it, even when it's difficult. Even when community hurts us and hurts our feelings. But the cost of love may also be grief. The cost of loving someone so well That's one day you're going to have to say bye to them. That's hard, but it's still worth it. That's part of the, it's worth it. Even when you're going to have to lose them, it is worth loving. It is worth being in these relationships. And that is a theme I want you to hear, is when relationships are hard, it is still worth having those relationships. Please don't give up on relationships as our society kind of tells us to. Do not. But you know, Jesus, pretty likely he lost his dad. We only hear about Mary in his adult life. I think maybe Jesus is mentioned one time as the son of the carpenter. But on the cross, he's asking John to take care of his mom. And you only do that if someone else isn't there to take care of him. The dad's not there to take care of him. So it's pretty likely that at some point Joseph passed. And which to me, my opinion, if you lose a parent before the age of 33, that was too soon. That was too soon. That's hard. Jesus had to wrestle with that. So when Psalm 34 says the Lord is close to the brokenhearted, I think it means it. I think that is really true. I believe God is there in the deepest, most painful moments in multiple ways. He's there because he gets it. He's there because he understands it, and he's there with you because he cares about you. So not only do we want to be friends to people in the hard and dark moments of life, I want to encourage you to do that. To first think back, think like right now, presently. Are there people in my life that I need to be more present with in these difficult moments? Are there people I need to reach out to a little bit more? Do I need to set aside a little bit of personal boundary that I've set up and enter into this a little bit more? Think about that. And then I want you to have in the back of your mind also, okay, think about that moving forward. Where in my life am I going to need to step up and show up like Job's friends did? Then the other side of that, I want you to know we have a God who is with us in the hard and darkest moments of life. Not only is he with us, but I believe he gets it. He understands that pain. He understands it from his perspective as God, and he understands it from his perspective as being a human who dealt with loss and pain. We have a God who loves us so much that he experienced it all, and he is with us in all of life's tough experiences. And if you want to be part of his community, if you want to give your life to him, if you want to receive his forgiveness, if you want a God who will walk with you through the darkest moments, but also through the best moments, we want to invite you to come now as together we stand and sing.